ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Last week we were doing this topic, chronology of action. This is a little important topic because this is the most important fundamental that all of us must understand. So he says every human being is a bundle of vasanas. Vasanas cannot be defined by your intellect because it is the cause of your intellect. Everything springs from vasanas. The thoughts from vasanas. So, intellect is discriminative thought which springs from vasana. So, using the intellect, you cannot define vasana. Vasana, maximum we can say, is inner temperament, inclination, inner nature. These words we use. They are not definitions of vasanas. They are all, at the most, you can say, pointers or indicators of what a vasana could be. So, what we say is, when you constantly linger upon a particular action, you, and especially indiscriminately, the contact and lingering creates certain impressions over a period of time. Those impressions over a period of time starts becoming vasanas. So, if a person has vasana for painting, the person will have, if the vasana manifests, will have thought of painting. Then, when he keeps thinking about it, he will have the desire to paint. The desire to paint will make him take the brush and actually paint, which is the action. So, vasana, thought, desire, action. All of us are bundle of vasanas. We have different set of vasanas. Therefore, the variety in our thoughts, desires, actions, etc. When we act, if we indiscriminately act, then we produce further vasanas. So we get caught in this cycle. When the body that we are now manifesting in is conducive for the set of vasanas to manifest, as long as it's conducive, it continues. But when the body becomes not so conducive, then vasanas cannot be expressed through that body. So what the nature does is, the body is given up and you take a new body through which you can express yourself. That is the explanation given for death. You give up the old body and you take up the new body at the right time and express the set of vasanas. You have set of vasanas to study Vedanta. You are born in this Zoom room. After about 12 or so, when your vasanas change, you have some other vasana. You will be moving into that particular room. If it's arts or something else, accordingly you will go there. So therefore, vasanas drive us from one experience to another. When the vasanas are exhausted, there will be no more birth. So we need to do actions. See now, when we have vasana, if you don't do action, what will happen? Mentally, if you keep on thinking about the object of your desires, you will only produce more and more vasanas. The vasanas become more strong. And since you have not acted to get the object of that vasana, desire, you are not going to get also. Neither are you going to physically experience it, nor are you going to exhaust the vasana. So Vedanta says, no, that is not what you are supposed to do. You cannot stifle your vasanas by not acting. Instead, act on the vasanas, but give them a direction using your buddhi. Give a higher direction. Now let us say you have this nature of wanting to talk. And you don't give a direction. What happens? So through that nature of talking, you will want to become famous. You will want to earn more money, etc., etc. Thoughts may come, desires may come. And you produce further vasanas. Instead, you give a certain direction and use it for certain purpose, whether it is teaching Vedanta or something else, whatever it could be. So then you are giving a higher direction. So when you are talking now, you are not thinking about name, fame, power, position, everything. You are now thinking about that goal. And that is also driven by the intellect, not mechanical. So you are not consolidating or solidifying the vasanas which are already there, but at the same time, exhausting them by giving them an expression. And also while acting, you are not thinking about something mechanically, other things in the world, so don't create fresh vasanas also. So therefore we say, you got to act renouncing the selfish ego, directing the vasanas towards the higher. When you function like that, then you exhaust the vasanas. Otherwise, you create further vasanas. So, he gave the example of the ritual where, you know, the camphor was compared with vasanas. Just like camphor is nothing but fragrance consolidator, our personality is vasana consolidator. Yeah. So this personality is compared with camphor. You light the camphor in the fire. When you go to the temple, the priest does that. When the camphor burns, you can see the divinity in the sanctum sanctorum, which is otherwise dark. Similarly, when you burn the vasanas through the knowledge of the self, then you can see the self, discovering the self, you can realize the self from within. So you've got to give a direction to your vasanas through the knowledge of the higher, through the knowledge of the self. When you do that, you are acting, but you are also simultaneously renouncing. That is called as renunciation in action. When you continuously do renunciation in action, which is Karma Yoga, for a sufficient period of time, and side by side do Bhakti and Jnana Yoga, slowly, slowly, the mind becomes matured. Your worldly vasanas are gone. You have now only interest to study Vedanta, think about it, discuss about divinity, discuss about realizing the self, the truth, etc., etc. So then you can decide whether you want to continue the same lifestyle or you want to take up the lifestyle of a sannyas. It's up to you. Some people take up the lifestyle of sannyas, become sannyasi. Some people don't take up the lifestyle of sannyas. They continue being in grihastha ashrama, but as far as practical point of view is concerned, they are sannyasi only. In the sense, though they are in the world, they are relating and all that, their mind is all the time thinking about Brahman, Atman, those vishaya only. So that stage is what we call as vanaprastha and then sannyasa ashrama. So that is renunciation of action. In the sense, you don't have any desires, so you don't have to act in that area. No problem. Because your mind is now thinking about something else. So now you start contributing in that area. That is renunciation of action. That's sannyas. This is tyaga. Renunciation in action is called tyaga. Renunciation of action is called sannyas. Sannyas is a state of mind. Sannyas is a state of mind. Tyaga is practice. Here, you cannot give up action. Why? Because desires are there. Then you will become an hypocrite. There is a shloka in the Bhagavad Gita, verse number 6, chapter 3. He says, if you control your karma, karmendriya, organs of action, karmendriyani samyangya, ya aste manasasmaran, indriyasa, vimudatma, mityacharasa uchyate. Karmendriyani samyangya means controlling the organs of action, not doing any action. Ya aste manasasmaran, indriyasa. one who sits thinking about the sense objects mentally. Mithyacharaha, he is an hypocrite. So karman ide samendriyani samyamya yaasya mrutasmaran indriyatam vimudatma mithyacharaha. The colossal idiot. Mithyachara, hypocrite. Mithyacharasya uchyate. He said to be a hypocrite. It's going to take you nowhere. Neither are you going to physically enjoy the object because you do not act. Nor are you going to mentally get rid of the desire because it's going to frustrate you and build more thoughts. So why do that? Instead, be in the field but directed towards the end. Be in the field but directed towards the end. Like you are a painter. Or you can paint for God. You can paint for somebody else. Whatever. A cricketer can be playing for the nation. A sportsman, any sportsman can be playing for the nation. Rather than just for himself or herself. So then he is thinking only about that. He is not thinking about his accolades, his name, fame, how much money he will get with that, what he can do. He is not thinking about all. So, he is given a direction to the vasanas also. And not creating fresh vasanas also. Not consolidating or solidifying the existing vasanas. Thus, the path of tyag, which is nothing but action underlined by knowledge, beautifully takes you above vasanas. And then you have a mind which is called sannyas mind. That is a different mind. You will want. Now you are not against the world, but you are not craving for the stuff in the world. You just made a simple thing. Don't even bother what is the food. What is it for lunch? No. When we are in the academy, no thought comes as to, not as if we are at the home it comes, but in the academy ashram, you don't even think what they are going to give for lunch. You go there, say the prayer, whatever it is that you eat, you are actually hungry. If you don't go out and eat at all, you are given food only in the morning, breakfast, about lunch, in between you are doing a lot of work and no eating in between meals, you will definitely feel hungry. So you don't care what food they give, you eat. So, this is called renunciation in action. That's the path through which you can go to renunciation of action to the state, and then from there you can go to meditation, and then through meditation you can realize the self. Now let's get on to this topic, renunciation in action. Please read, Shweta.
Renunciation in action. Thought, desire and action emanate from vasanas like a video projection from a compact disc. Every being acts according to its own vasanas. A human alone, among all living beings, has the choice of action. Other living creatures are denied the freedom to act apart from their inherent nature. A tiger is ferocious. It can never be meek and mild. It must strike and kill. Whereas a cow is docile by nature. Far from destructive. Animals thus live through a choiceless pattern of life. An animal fulfills its vasanas in the realm of activities into which it is born. Following its determined course, an animal neither evokes or evolves or devolves. But a human enjoys freedom of action. He could be most sacrificial to the society or be extremely harmful. He could consciously exhaust his vasanas and rise to greater depths of perfection or accumulate vasanas and sink to lower depths of degradation. The choice to evolve or devolve is rendered possible because the human possesses the unique faculty of self-effort. Self-effort gives the freedom of action independent of vasanas. The present vasanas set the pattern of one's life, but self-effort can modify or change the pattern. This is a prerogative a human being alone enjoys.
So, first and foremost thing that we need to understand is vasana brings out the action. No action, if there is an action, means there is a desire, there is a thought, there is a person backing it. So he therefore says thought, desire and action emanate from vasana like video projection from a compact disc. If there is comedy movie which is loaded in the compact disc CD, that is what will come out. If there is tragedy movie, that is what will come out. If there is an action or thriller, that will come out. Depending upon each one's vasanas, they live their life. That's what it means. But He should not become very dejected by this statement. This is why he is bringing this in. While we are all expressing our vasanas, we also have what is called as purushartha or self-effort. The freedom to choose. Every minute we have a freedom to choose. Animals don't have that choice. They all follow a beaten path. But that is okay for them because in their case they cannot go on gathering fresh vasanas. You will never find an animal. When they are hungry, they will fight with each other to eat. Once they have eaten, in the mind, food is not there. Till they again feel hungry. You understand? There is no future concept in the mind of the animal. See, for example, some of the animals, which have a little more developed brains compared to the other, they are able to sense their death, isn't it? But that is temporary. When a deer is grazing and the lion is coming, in which that moment deer gets the thought, runs to save. But let's say the deer escapes. Then happily after, once the deer has escaped, happily deer will sit and graze the grass. But that is not the case with a human being. You will be mentally thinking about it. Oh my God, pata nahi kahan hai, kab aayega wapas, ye ho jayega, wo ho jayega. You go on, think about it. This doesn't happen in animals. That's what he's trying to say. They have a beaten path. They live that. They just express and that's it. So there's no question of worrying about the past, nor anxious of the future. So there's no thinking. Action ho gaya, asana, propel them to action, ho gaya bas. But in our case, it's not like that. We can add. Similarly, we can also delete consciously by functioning correctly, learning from the scriptures. This choice we have. That is what he's trying to say. All of us have what is called as choice of action. If we keep on increasing vasanas, we will be sinking lower and lower in spiritual field. If we exhaust vasanas, we will be getting closer and closer to Brahman and evolving. So we have a chance to evolve or devolve. In the animal's case, they do not have that chance. So he says, therefore, the choice to evolve or devolve is rendered possible because the human being possesses the unique faculty called self-effort. Self-effort gives the freedom of action independent of vasanas. Now this is another debate that happens in the spiritual circles. And they never can come to a conclusion. This debate will continue. People may not agree. What Vedanta says is, especially Advaita Vedanta, you have vasanas, you have self-effort. Self-effort is independent of vasanas. But once with the self-effort, you have taken an action. That will be done in the background of the vasanas. So, he says the present vasanas set the pattern of one's life, but self-effort can modify or change the pattern. But this modify or change cannot happen overnight because it's done in the background of the vasanas. So he says this is the prerogative of human being alone, nobody else. The human being enjoys this prerogative. He says no other animals, no other species. So your self-effort is not predetermined. That, you know, today you will choose to attend the class, not bunk it. It is already written. SNIA. So, many different examples are discussed in this context. One is like a railway track. The train is free to move, but within the railway tracks. This is one example given. All this is discussed in detail in Part C. Part C of the Vedanta. Then another example given is, if a wall is painted yellow, you know, and then you try to paint it some other color. You apply that other color, immediately it won't become that color. You've got to apply it 2-3 times. In between it comes different combination colors. But third or fourth coat will establish that. So, all they want to say is, self-effort is an independent force. It is not dependent on your vasanas. But you've got to constantly apply that self-effort till the self-effort action establishes itself. Otherwise, it's like, you know, you are adding a little bit of self-effort, it won't be visible. For it to become visible, you have to constantly apply the self-effort. That's all it is. Continue, please.
Exercising the choice of action, you must first select a field of activity conducive to your vasanas. From early childhood, you display a distinct interest, a leaning towards a particular branch of life. It may be science or literature, philosophy or medicine, any field of activity. You would do well to choose the field of your interest. Activities which are consistent with your inherent nature are called swadharma, whereas those which are alien to your nature are paradharma. Swadharma activities help you progress or evolve in life, while paradharma activity is detrimental, causing you to regress or devolve. People commit the fundamental mistake of choosing an alien field of activity because they have inherited it or it is just convenient for them to do so. The scripture warns you against this error in life. It will not be in your interest to choose a field of activity alien to your nature, while choosing a field compatible to your nature would promote your material and spiritual growth.
See, this is a very important lesson again. A lot of us don't follow this, many, especially in the Indian context, if you see. Swadharma and Paradharma. This is discussed in the 35th verse of chapter 3 of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Shreyam Swadharmo Vigunaha Paradharma Swanushtita. Swadharme Nidhanam Shreyaha Paradharmo Bhayavahaha. That is the shloka. Swadharma means one's own nature. Paradharma means alien nature. Somebody else's nature. Now, Vitaji has a particular Swadharma. Cheta has a particular Swadharma. She goes on making pots. She goes on painting. Both asanas I don't have. You understand? My vasanas are completely different. So I have a certain nature. So Swadharma means the bulk of your nature. So what you really love to do in life, that's what is called the Swadharma. Now, in some it's very predominant, it's just one. Like for example, Tendulkar. You know, they can't think of anything else. It's very clear. In some it's 2-3. So sort of a good confusion was happening. Because end of the day it's life. But whatever it is, you must choose the field of your nature. So if you are a combination where there is too much rajas and then tamas, very little sattva, you would do well to do activities like being in defense or being in, administration, leadership. You will see such people, even if there is, supposing you are having class and there is crisis, suddenly that one or two people who have that inclination, they take charge of the situation. They say, okay, you'll have to do like this, you'll have to do like this, you do this, you do this. Because that's the nature. They automatically function like that. They have that nature, swadharma. So, somebody has a different swadharma. It's good, no? Everybody has different swadharmas. That's how it is helpful to supplement and complement with each other. Who is superior, who is inferior in this? Nothing like that. So, he says, first be careful choosing your swadharmic field. Because mind cooperates. But sometimes, not sometimes, many times in India, we choose the field of activity because it's convenient. My father started business. Or my grandfather started business, which my father somehow took it. Maybe he had Swadharma, maybe he didn't. Now it's come to some level because he applied himself, working hard, though frustrated and all that. But somehow the business has grown. Now they are forcing me to get into business. And yeah, my nature is completely different. Why are you forcing me? Swamiji says, I don't know whether it's quoted that in the book. In one hospital, this is how their family business. He said they had a dispensary and it was growing like anything, slowly. So third generation, they forced the son to get into medicine. That fellow was interested in automobile engineering. Every now and then he's going on repairing something or the other, some car, some bike, something. He's interested in that. But they said, no, you have to choose medicine. You are the only son who's going to look into this hospital and all that. So you better study. So he studied. He worked hard, he got marks, he succeeded. Then he came as a doctor there itself. But every now and then they'll search for him. Where is this doctor missing? Then they find him under the ambulance repairing it. Because his heart is there. That is what he loves. You understand? And unnecessarily forcing that fellow to be somewhere else. The mind is there, the heart is there. Let him get into that field. Instead of getting into paradharmic field, alien, however convenient it may be, there is nothing you have to do. You just go and take over. No. You may get certain external conveniences, but deep inside you'll be a frustrated person. And you will be thinking about those things and those will become more and more solidifying within you, those vessels. Okay. So neither you are doing something else, inside is something else, or you want to live such a life. Therefore, he says, your scriptures warn you against such an error in life. Don't do that. Do what your Swadharma is. It's okay. What you can do? In India, you see, cricketers earn so much money. Other sportsmen not earning that much money. So just because there's a lot of money in it, if you go there, it may not be your Swadharma at all. You won't be able to even play for your district. And even if you work hard and somehow play, every now and then your heart will be in the, your real sports. That is why, you know, he says you must choose the field of your activity. But this is only the beginning. Once you have chosen the field of activity, within the field of activity, what you have to do? That he says in the next paragraph. Continue.
Having chosen the appropriate field, you must execute the right actions in life. This is important since you are given the choice of action. The general trend in human activity is to indulge in personal feeling. Attraction or repulsion seem to initiate your action. You ought not to let your likes and dislikes determine your life's activities. There is a grave error in letting your emotional feelings take over your life thus. Likes and dislikes manifesting without discretion could turn out to be your worst enemy. If you feed them indiscriminately, you court destruction. Your actions need proper direction. The intellect should guide your likes and dislikes in every action. Do as reason bids you. What you like to do may be opposed to what you ought to do in life.
So once you have chosen the field of activity according to your mind, within that field, don't act on your mind. In that field, you have to act on your buddhi. You know. The field of activity for me, I've chosen is Vedanta. Now, within this field, oh, today I don't feel like coming to the class. I don't want to go. Then I'm acting on my likes and dislikes. No. There is a genuine reason. Not well or something or traveling or something is there. That's a different thing. There the intellect is guiding. But within the field, you ought not to give in to your likes and dislikes. Choose the field according to your likes. But within the field, don't act on your likes and dislikes. Within the field, you've got to act driven by your buddhi. The direction should come from your buddhi. Whether you like or not, it is what you are supposed to do. To do it. See, a student chooses, like for example, when I did engineering, now my choice was electronics, but they give that only in the second year. First year you have to study anything. You study physics, chemistry, engineering, drawing. That is something which I don't really like. But I can't say I don't like it and I don't want to write the exam. I have to get the pass mark at least. Otherwise, I won't get the degree. So, whether or not you like, within the field, there may be certain things do not be according to your likes. You cannot help it. You have to apply yourself. The broad field has to be according to your nature. That is the vasanas. But within the field, don't act on your likes and dislikes. In fact, if you do, then you are feeding the likes and dislikes, those vasanas to become strong, which will not help you to succeed in the material world also, and in spiritual field also, you're going to be increasing more and more vasanas. So it's not going to help you. Therefore, he says, within the field, you got to check your likes and dislikes. It's like this, you know. What they call is headwind and tailwind. Sometimes the flights from Mumbai to Pune, sorry, Delhi to Pune is X amount of time. Let's say 1 hour 55 minutes. While returning, it will come in 1 hour 50 minutes. Why? They say tailwind. While going headwind. Engine speed is same. But headwinds are tailwind. Similarly, if you choose the field of your activity according to your nature, it will be tailwind. It will help you. And but within the field, use your buddhi. So then you will exhaust the vasanas and don't create fresh vasanas. That's the idea. Continue.
Perhaps, says Thomas Huxley, the most valuable result of all education is the ability to make yourself do the thing you have to do when it ought to be done, whether you like it or not. It is the first lesson that ought to be learned, and however early a person's training begins, it is probably the last lesson a person learns thoroughly. If you wish to live up to the dignity of a human being, your intellectual judgment, rather than emotional impulse, should be the guiding factor in your activity. Those whose activities yield to mere emotions reduce themselves to the status of lower beings.
So, he says this is the first lesson we all should learn, but this is perhaps the last lesson we learn, or we don't learn. Because most of the time we give it to our impulse, we do what we like. We also keep people who flatter our ego, not those who help us to flatten our ego. Isn't it? Because we like to constantly cater to our likes and dislikes. I don't like it, I will not do it. I like it, I want to do it. Whether or not it's correct, I like it, I'll do it. So that's why he says, you know, if you wish to live up to the dignity of a human being, your intellectual judgment rather than emotional impulse should be the guiding factor in your life. When you go and wait for the lift, simple example I'm giving, you go wait for the lift, and then sometimes you find, okay, you may be the one who went first, but there are, you know, an elderly couple who have come, they're also waiting. So you say, first you people go in, then I will get in. Then you have this choice. Other is, you may be the last fellow to come. So many people are waiting, you push everybody and go inside. You will do like this also. There are people who do like this also. So, what are you living up to? What kind of a human being are you? You are worse than animal. So that's what he says. Those whose activities lead to mere emotions reduce themselves to the status of a lower being. You have the choice. You can act and rise, or you can act and fall. Choice is yours. So, you must learn to control your likes and dislikes. You must learn to control your likes and dislikes and direct them towards the chosen goal. Goal is to exhaust vasanas, not to increase vasanas. It may look victory in the short term, but in the long term it is detrimental to you. It's destructive. It is, isn't it? The instant pleasure that we get when we inhale the smoke, when you're smoking, if you would, they get the kick. It's temporary. But in the long run, they're going on burning their lungs, everything they're burning. It's detrimental. Similarly, when you're giving to your likes and dislikes, the pressures of the impulses within, it looks like victory in the beginning, but it's not. That's all he said. Continue.
Satan tried to tempt Jesus Christ with all sorts of worldly attractions to lure him away from his spiritual stance. Christ would have nothing to do with those temptations. His response to Satan turned out to be a great message to humanity. Get thee behind me, Satan. I will have none of thy hands. Christ's mission was divine. This intellect stood by his noble mission. So must you relate to the world. Never yield to its temptation. Stand firm. Do not allow them to obstruct your mission in life. There is nothing wrong in transacting with the world, but ensure that your worldly affairs do not impair your progress in life. When they entice you away from your mission, you should take the grand stand of the Lord.
So, it's a beautiful quotation by Jesus Christ. He says, get thee behind me, Satan. I will have nothing from thy hands. See, this Satan in Christianity, Mara in Buddhism, Shaitan in Islam, Asura, Rakshasa in Hinduism, all these are referring to desires. The real problem is desires, likes and dislikes. If you allow them to be the boss, it's a problem. If they are your slave, it's good. So, Satan tried to tempt. Every one of us get temptations. Isn't it? No, funny thing is, huh? Funny also, but it's a little interesting. In the academy, we have the ashram in the village, Malagu. So the villagers, apart from their work in the agricultural field and all that, they don't get much work. So because we have ashram, the villagers, some of them come and work in our ashram. They get some money to survive. Even there, some people apparently come from the neighboring village to take them away. They will distract, they will tempt them. We'll give you double salary, triple salary. Like that, every now and then you will get some temptations or the other. Wherever you are, there will be temptation. So that's what he's saying. When these temptations come, you should have the capacity to say no. If it's coming in between you and your work, your mission, your goal in life, you should say bye-bye to Satan. And Hanumanji was given the mission to go and find Ma Sita in Lanka and, you know, tell her that Rama is coming with the army to fight with Rama. Just give her assurance. Actually, the story goes that even Rama knows, Sita knows, that individually they themselves can finish off Rama. But Sita didn't want to do that. Giving him a chance to change. So now, when Hanumanji is on the way to Lanka, lot of temptations. So many mountains swelled up, Rakshasis, and said, please be the guest here, enjoy. You know, all these bounties in the mountain is yours. Take it. Hanumanji told the same thing what Jesus has said. Get thee behind me, Satan. I will have nothing from thy hand. He just put it a little differently. He said, listen, I'm going on a very important mission. Now I cannot have it. But when I come back, I will certainly, enjoy all this. Thanks for the hospitality, on the left. He didn't hurt them, at the same time he didn't allow the temptations to come in between. If we do not have this capacity, it's difficult. It's difficult to succeed in the world, definitely in spirituality. So he says, there is nothing wrong in transacting with the world, but ensure that your worldly affairs do not impair your progress. If it starts impairing, it's a problem. You understand? See, in the academy, when I was studying, few of the course subjects, they all slowly, slowly started playing chess. Because there was one fellow who was a chess player. In the junior level, he had really done very well in India. He also joined the ashram. So he brought a chess, board with him. So then we slowly started playing chess. And one day I had told my friends in the academy, "Are Baba, I am not going to play chess anymore." Now what happened? Morning 4 o'clock I'm sitting, I'm thinking what move I should move. If Anant will do this, if this fellow will do this when I'm playing against them, that time he moved this one, then this happened. I'm thinking that, rather than sitting and studying Vedanta, I came to Vedanta Academy to study Vedanta, not to play chess, which I can do in Chennai itself. Why did I come from Chennai to Academy to play chess? Now, it started coming in between, therefore, I said, no. That's all he's explaining. Till it doesn't come, it's okay, you just played, okay, has to come. It's okay, so what is the big deal? Evening, with the cup of tea, you're sitting and playing chess, it's okay. Half an hour, 45 minutes. There's nothing else to do, it's okay, then it's okay. But it is coming and interfering in your studies. Then you should have the ability to say, no, thank you, Lord. Because your mind started getting involved. That's all he's saying. Your likes and dislikes should never be given the grip over your life. If you give grip, that's it, it'll finish it. Then slowly, slowly, your intellect will start justifying. They will be holding the intellect as a hostage. And the intellect will give reasons as to why you can eat it, why you can do this. You will go on justifying. That's why he says, you have this ability. When they entice you away from your mission, you should take the grand stand of the Lord, of Jesus Christ. Say, get deep behind me, Satan. I will have nothing from thy hands. Don't try to tempt me. I have to do this for the goal, not for my selfish reasons. I'm not going to give in to my, inconvenience or convenience. Continue.
In exercising your choice of action, remember that no act can be labeled virtuous or
vicious
per se. It would not be proper to classify certain acts as righteous and others as unrighteous. Virtue and vice is a thing of the heart. Good or bad actions have to do with the state of your mind and not with your gross physical actions. To reform yourself, therefore, it is not your body but your mind that has to be rehabilitated or reconstructed.
See, this concept we have that certain things are spiritual, certain things are non-spiritual, and there's dharma, there's not dharma, all this is conditioning. You've got to break these conditions. That's why he says, in exercising your choice of action, remember that no act can be labeled as virtuous or vicious. Action per se, how can you call it as virtuous or vicious? So that's why he says, it would be very, very improper to classify certain acts as righteous and others as unrighteous. If somebody is a butcher, he cannot imagine, the conditioning such that, he cannot imagine that that person is spiritual, can be spiritual. Right? He is butcher, he is spiritual. We are conditioned, the problem is with us, not with him. He is doing his Swadharma, he is doing his nature, he is you know, he's also playing the role in the society. So, now, in fact, when the actual thing happened in one of my class members' life, he's from Mumbai, but he used to attend classes in Dubai when I was conducting classes there. So he told me once when he had come to Mumbai, when he was traveling in the local train, his purse was, looted, pickpocketed. So he had a friend who was really higher up in the police. So he told the police friend, yeah, this happened. He told him within an hour's time, this happened, when I was coming in the train. He said, okay, evening you come to the place where I tell you. So he took him there. And there were too many purses and many things. He said, you find your purse in this. And he found his purse there. In the sense, they know all this, the pickpockets and all these fellows. And I believe within themselves, between this station to this station, this fellow is in charge. If he doesn't pick it up, he will tell the other fellow will do it. He is not in charge there. Some connection like that they have. So he asked this class member, asked the police, hey, you know all these things, you fellows, and why are you allowing them to do this? He said, listen, we don't completely stop them. We can't put such pressure on them because these are the fellows who come to know when bigger terrorists now come to Mumbai or any other city. Through these fellows only we come to know information. They are informers also. So, now, I'm only giving this example from a very limited point of view. This is not completely what I'm saying. But then, what I'm trying to say is everybody has a role to play. Therefore, I'm not saying, okay, pickpocket and be an informer. I'm not saying that. So the interesting thing is, who are we to decide which is righteous, which is unrighteous? What direction is it taking? That's what we are supposed to say. Isn't it? With so many youngsters, especially these teenagers and all, I believe they do a lot of this hacking. You know, thrill for them to hack. You give them a direction. They know how the hackers function. So if they work for the government, they are able to solve a lot of hacking problems. It's just, that's the nature, the talent. It's part of it. So what? How do you want to judge it? Just giving it a direction. So that's what it says. Virtue and vice is a thing of the heart. Good or bad actions have to do nothing with the state of mind. You know, physical action may be something else, my intention may be something else. So to reform yourself, therefore, it is not your body, but your mind that has to be rehabilitated, reconstituted. It is the inside, not the outside. Continue.
In a real-life incident, a man pulled out an automatic in a crowded restaurant and mercilessly shot down scores of people. Another person behind him chanced to have a gun with him. He shot the killer down. Now examine their actions. The actions were the same, but one was a mass homicide. The other was an act of service to the rest exposed to death. It is the intention that makes an action virtuous or vicious.
So to support that argument, he's giving this example. Similarly, a surgeon plunging the knife in the patient's body vis-a-vis a terrorist plunging the knife. Plunging the knife is the same action, but one is virtuous, other is vicious. So action per se cannot be called as vicious or virtuous. It is the intention. It is the direction. Continue.
Work is best when done impersonally. No sooner one asserts the selfish ego, work is spoiled. Thus should your mind be unattached to the work you perform. Fix your mind upon your divine self within while you work. Be objective in what you do. Do not get mentally entangled in the affairs of the world. You must learn to live in your home, your office, society as an impersonal witness. Never get mixed up or attached to them. People believe that when you do not get attached and involved in worldly matters, they cannot work, progress in life. It is an erroneous concept. The truth is that is the opposite. The moment you get entangled in the world, your work suffers. Whereas when your ego, your little self is absent, when you are unattached and impersonal, work turns out perfect. You progress in life.
Take the example of a person who is generally a chatterbox, going on talking all the time. You put him on a podium, he fumbles. He cannot talk. Or even if he's come prepared, he's done rehearsal many times. He's come prepared. But looking at the audience and everything, he becomes so self-conscious. I should not become a laughing stock. I should not forget my words. I should not forget the joke. The joke also is prepared. Now that fellow cannot deliver. Work suffers when ego comes in between. So you've got to do it impersonally. So first is choose the field of activity according to your nature. Within that, don't act on your likes and dislikes. And don't think certain actions are good, bad, like that, nothing like that. Whatever is your nature, give it a direction. While doing it, don't bring in your ego there. So that's why he says, work is best done impersonally. No sooner the ego asserts, no sooner one asserts the selfish ego, work is spoiled. The moment the thought of I comes, to that extent, the action becomes impoverished. Common example we give is of a batsman. Now, he's going on playing nicely. According to the merit of the ball, he'll hit it to the four or sixer or defendant, whatever. Now, suddenly in 92-93, he starts getting fidgety because he starts thinking about it. Ego has come. Selfish ego. I must score essentially. The moment I comes, it spoils. So he says, work is spoiled. So therefore, you should do the action unattached for it to be extremely successful. Unattached means you don't look at action as a means to satisfy your selfish ego and egocentric desires. It is an opportunity for you to serve, to give to the society. That is how you should look at it. So, he says, thus should your mind be unattached to work you perform. Fix your mind upon the divine self within while you work. Be objective in what you do. Be a witness. I am the self playing the role of Lakshmi Narayan, the teacher now. Teaching without the treatise, renunciation in action. Teach it to the best of your ability, get up. Then after this, maybe I'll go to ashram. Just an example. There, my guru is the teacher, I am the teacher. There, I will be objective, do the role of a student, whatever that may be. Like this, you function. This is called objectivity. Be objective in what you do. Do not get mentally entangled in the affairs of the world. You must learn to live in your home, your office, society as an impersonal witness. What happens is, we take all the office problems home. We take all the home problems to the office. Why you want to do that? You're not able to, you know, keep it separately. The contrary is, people think that if they don't get involved, best doesn't come. In fact, it's because you're involved, the best is not coming out. In fact, the same whole paragraph can be summarized in one sentence. What? When the worker is dead, work is. When the worker is alive, the work is dead. Or, you put it this way, execute the action, executing ego. All the time, what is in it for me? What will I get? Will I get me? Will I get fame? Will I get the success? Will I get this thing? Will I get promotion? I just do it. Like Nike says, Nike is broken. This is what he's saying. The moment you get entangled in work, your work suffers because you start thinking about all nonsense. Everything is going on in the head. You're not able to focus. How can you focus? Whereas in your ego, your little self is absent. When you're unattached and impersonal, work turns out perfect. You progress in life. You progress in life. See, in other words, it is God doing it from you. You're relaxed. Very relaxed. In fact, many times it happens, you know. In IPL, for example, I think Mumbai team is out. They can't now come to semi-finals. Now I think those fellows will play well. As it is last match, Surya Kumar Yadav hit a century. Because now you don't worry of qualifying. So ho gaya, abhi kar nahi sakte. So relax, automatically you play well. Unnecessarily you put pressure on yourself by getting involved. This is what happens. Continue.
Look at the world as a witness. It becomes a source of enjoyment. Get entangled in the activities of the world, it turns into a misery. Therefore, learn to perform your action detachedly. Find joy in work itself, not in the result. The fruit of labor cannot bring you any more happiness than labor itself. Yet the world believes the result obtained provides more joy than work. Reflect carefully. Do not give undue importance to applause or censure, success or failure. Try to understand the futility of material pursuit. Objects gained by your effort only mislead you. Be not concerned with the fruit of action. Just carry on with what you ought to do. Then alone you find true fulfillment in life.
So it's not only achieving success through objectivity, controlling your ego, also you enjoy. So in fact, they say the happiness or enjoyment is in the garb of work. That is how you look at it when you understand. It's just that you don't know how to remove the, mask and enjoy. He says, when you are a witness, you enjoy. The common example we give is, when you go to watch a movie, you enjoy so much because you are a part from the tragedy, like a Titanic movie. So many people died, hero died. And the movie was such a big hit. Tremendous hit. All over the world. Now, why? Outside, objective, you enjoy. When you come close, you don't enjoy. The distance you got to maintain. That is what he's saying. Get entangled, you finish. You stand apart, you enjoy. It becomes the source of joy. When you detachedly perform action, it gives you bliss. If you completely involve yourself, it doesn't give you bliss. That's when you become tired, fatigued. Fatigue is caused by your involvement in action. Action cannot cause fatigue. So he says, how does it matter whether they praise you, appreciate, just play and get out? We'll discuss this next week again. Just continue. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyaiva Udya Punava Prakate Swabhavat Karomi Vidyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayana Yeti Samarpayami.